Murray Staunton and Dermot Gavin are with me now. Any Meatloaf fans among either of you?
Yeah.
Really?
Definitely brings.
I remember going to parties back in the 80s, and the only album they had was Bad Out of Hell, and they'd play it over and over, and everybody's shaking their long hair.
Ah, great, great stuff. Murray, did you ever get to see him?
No, I didn't, but, you know, Wesley and Stradbroke Rugby Club and, you know, all those places that it was belted out, fantastic, you know, absolutely fantastic.
Belting out the Meatloaf. Yeah. We'll all be doing that, won't we, a bit later on with the memories.
It's funny, isn't it, though? I was listening on the radio today. You didn't think that Meatloaf passing would affect you, but it is an era. It really got me.
Oh, no, it is. It's definitely, I mean, particularly for people of a certain generation, it is the fabric of our lives growing up. You mean, you may not have been a huge fan, but he was there. It's the soundtrack to our lives in a certain part. Anyway, let's get back to the gardening, and people are getting in touch, and I ask you to continue to do so if you have a gardening question for Murray and Dermot. 51551. So we're kind of emerging, aren't we? As I said earlier on, blinking into the sunlight for more reasons than one today. But we're starting to think about the spring, aren't we, Murray? What are the things we should be doing now?
Oh, we are. You know, the weather has been fantastic. Really, really good. So it kind of gets you out there to clean up, basically, and get things started. Now, you can start sowing seeds in the next while if you can sow them indoors. If you want to start stuff outdoors, you're looking at broad beans and things like that. But you need to get, you know, roses into the ground, all those things that it's just a lovely time of the year to really get out in the garden.
And Dermot, do we have to worry about the lawn at all at this time?
Yeah, you should not walk on it too much. It is cold, you know, there's been a little bit of frost. You can do damage there. Walking on it compacts it and doesn't do it any good. And also clear away, you know, if there's lots of leaves on it, clear away those leaves. So give it kind of some space to breed. I think what Murray is saying about the seeds thing is really important. And people in the last few years, because they've taken to gardening in huge numbers, have had difficulties getting seeds later in the season. So there's some great Irish companies, such as Brown Envelope Seeds, who are in West Cork, or Seedaholic, who are in Galway, are connected to Nature, who do all the wildflower seeds. So if you go online, look at their catalogues early and get your orders in, so when it really does come to time planting directly into the soil, that you have exactly what you want. And only purchase what you want to grow. So no point in having five different varieties of tomatoes or whatever. But all those companies have really good Irish varieties of seed.
Yeah, we can be quite ambitious, can't we, this time of the year, Murray? And overbuy on the seeds.
Yeah, you think you're going to eat all these things, like you're buying like radishes and seed for different types of carrots and heirloom this and heirloom that. But you know what? Just put in or buy what you think you're going to eat, to be honest. And then it's easier. You know, you won't get overwhelmed by it all.
Let's take some questions now. Plenty of them coming in.
Yeah.
My new dog, we were talking about dogs yesterday, but this is a dog and garden question, has destroyed my garden that I used to love gradually over the last 9 months. Oh, the poor dog. He's dug holes all over the garden. The lawn is patchy and muddy in addition to the huge holes. How can I fix it and bring it back to a nice, healthy lawn for the kids to play on? Is it possible to fix over the spring months? Well, I don't know. I mean, I'd say only fix it, Dermot, if the dog isn't going to go and do it again.
That's it. At a certain stage, so we have two dogs, and when they were pups, they were dibbles. And Claire, I remember you getting a dog and having to chase it down the street because
still do same dog.
They get up to all sorts. What I found was a disaster was when I was planting using any organic material, so well-rotted farmyard manure or any bone meal or anything like that, they dug all my really lovely plants up to get at anything organic. So it's just a matter of trying to train, maybe during the summer, spraying the hose of the dog if it goes near your favourite plants. But
you're spraying water at the dog. If Kathleen Murray was on here now, a dog expert, she would be very, very cross with
you.
Well,
I could say putting out pepper dust.
No, gosh!
But it is garden or dog for a while when they're young, I'm afraid, because they do, you know, depending on the type of dog you have, you will have patchy lungs.
Yeah, and it'll get better.
It'll get better.
As the dog gets older, it'll get better. It mightn't be this summer, but sometime after that. This person would love to have wildflowers in the garden. Apparently, I'm too late to use bee bombs. I love the look of wildflowers that many councils have used lately. What can I do, Murray?
It's never too late, you know. I mean, generally speaking, you're putting in, but you can put them in spring. So you're going to clear off an area where you're actually going to sow them in, or you can sow them into plug trays, which are, you know, kind of seed trays with a longer root run, and then you can transplant them into the area that you want to be a wildflower kind of meadow. So it isn't too late, no.
Okay.
And the bee bombs are kind of entry level. They won't give you that much, but if you'd really put some thought into preparing an area and give over some of the lawn, or just let your lawn grow and see what comes up, because, you know, some of the grasses, when they flower, they can be very beautiful.
This next one now, this is an interesting one. I need advice about removing tree stumps of varying sizes from a back garden to allow a new lawn to be laid and new trees to be planted. I've heard of drilling holes in the stump and pouring in an Epsom salts and water mixture. Is this effective? Never heard of that.
Generally it would be milk. That would be an old fashioned one to use instead of a chemical. So you drill the holes, you put milk in it. The milk acid in the milk rots the stump, but it's a long process. The other one is stump grinding, where they bring in a machine where they stump grind it down. And that's probably, you know, the more that's the quicker option. So it depends on how much money you want to lay out, really.
Okay. That's it. There are chemicals or hard brush wood killers available, but we're not mad on the chemical use in gardens. But
can you just dig them out? Why don't you just dig them out?
You can.
Easier said than done. In many cases.
Okay, you could tell I wouldn't do that myself, but I'm just thinking other people might like to dig them out. Clematis and a honeysuckle are in the same pot. They now need to be divided into separate pots because the honeysuckle has taken over and the other one only grows to about 4 feet. When should I repot? Repotting advice, Mari.
Now is ideal. And when you take it out of the pot, especially with the two, the clematis and the honeysuckle in the pot, tease out the root systems of both, so you're separating them out. The deal with clematis, well, you can obviously grow them in pots, but you need to give them a deep, when you're planting them, plant them deeper than originally planted, because they, in case we get clematis wilt, they'll recover from underground and come back again. The honeysuckle just plant the original depth, but they need to, the honeysuckle are brutish in comparison to clematis, you know. So yeah, I would separate them into different pots or put them in the garden.
Okay. Catherine in Limerick has a problem with mint. She planted mint in the vegetable garden a few years ago. Now, it sounds like you're both familiar with this. It has spread everywhere, including her neighbour's garden. Is there any way I can get rid of it without using sprays?
Just dig it up and make sure to dig all the roots up. It is a bit of a thug. It spreads everywhere. One tip, if you're planting mint in the garden, plant it in a pot. So there's very few plants we say that about, but it will restrict the root and the invasive quality of the plant.
Okay, Ursula is looking for a recommendation on a mature tree to provide screening for her house.
It depends on where, but if it's screening, it's probably going to be in an urban or suburban situation. And there's a tree that I absolutely love that's just about to start flowering in my garden. So Acacia delbata, false mimosa, which has it grows very fast. You get them as young specimens, put them in a sheltered spot, and they absolutely fly up. And in another few weeks, my tree is going to be covered in a kind of powdery yellow, kind of Hawaiian colour, and they're absolutely brilliant. But on that, the GLDA, which is the Garden Design and Landscape Association, they're doing a whole tree seminar on Saturday, February the 26th, and they have speakers from all over Europe, including the amazing Thomas Pakenham, who wrote that book, Meeting with Remarkable Trees. So if you go online on the GLDA, you'll hear everything you want to know about trees.
Okay, and the one you mentioned there was false mimosa, was it?
Yeah, acacia, A-C-A-C-I-A. Again, planting. They don't transplant very well, but planting as a young specimen, they do. They just grow so beautiful. They're evergreen, almost a fern-like foliage, and that flower is remarkable. Mari, do you like acacias?
I do have a couple of them, yeah, and they do get big, and they flower beautifully, coming into flower actually now. And there's another one called Hoheria sextilosa. Yeah. You probably would be familiar with that, and it has beautiful white flowers. Yeah. In August.
Yeah.
And
is there really a layman's name for that now, Mari? Because
just like, Hoheria then. Hoheria.
A little bit. Right, I'm going to give you this one because this is somebody who's starting from scratch, moving into my first own home in the coming fortnight. The garden is only grass, so let's imagine a lawn.
Exciting.
I'm looking forward to developing a wonderland, but where should I start? It's wide and shallow with a long north-facing slope. Now, this I can tell this person is invested in getting this right.
Yeah. It's do you know what? It's trees, isn't it? You know, the backbone of any garden is trees, and that will automatically mature it. It will give it that kind of backbone. And so it's doing your homework on the trees that you want in a garden. Obviously, it's a suburban garden, so they will be smaller. So you may look at acers, beautiful. So you're going to have beautiful autumn colour and beautiful spring colour. And those are the ones to get right. And then, you know, the creating the borders. In my garden here, we have kind of what I call a hot border with all the really hot colours, reds and oranges and vibrancy. And then the other one is really soft pinks and purples and that sort of thing, whites. So it's to get that kind of right. But I would suggest trees are the backbone and get them in first. And that will give you
the other thing. If you're just moving into a new garden, don't feel you have to rush into it. Take some time to live with it and observe what happens, what grows, where the sun is at different times of the day. In productive parts, so if you want to grow some vegetables or a border full of flowers, see where the sun is. That will even tell you where to put your area for resting, so your little terrace, your little patio or your little deck, when you have time to use it. So it might be coming in after work, it might be early in the morning for a cup of coffee. So observing what's happening with your plot. And look around, see what's growing in neighbours' gardens, see what does well in that area. So rather than rush into, too many things, but trees and getting the soil right, because you will be planting. So if you do want to do something, just especially if it's a new build, the builders might have left it compacted, there might be rubble in it. So adding organic matter for where the intensive planting will be going on.
This one, Mari, person is in County Louth. I'm planning on planting a hedgerow in my front garden in the coming month or two. Could you please ask, one, when is the best time to plant the hedge? And two, what would be the best hedge for bees and other wildlife?
Well, now, get them in now, and you can still get some bare-rooted. So if you're planning a native hedge, which is always going to be the better one, you're looking at hawthorn, a bit of holly.
Wonderful.
Spindle. So those sort of things will obviously give you berries and are really good for pollinators and are really good for wildlife. So, and they create a kind of a wildlife corridor. So they're safe for birds to nest in because they're thorny, you know, and they're really easy to keep. You know, when you put in laurels and big things like that, they require, you know, a heavy duty cutting back every year. But when you put in something as controlled as a native hedge, with all those beautiful kind of flowers going on, they're a lot easier to manage and they're cheaper to put in, cheaper.
Just
you can buy them in whips.
A quick one here, Dermot. Norma has a problem similar to the mint, wild garlic. She says she's spent hundreds of hours digging out the bulbs and it's a waste of time. She's very judicious, you know, with the use of weed killers and chemicals and so on. So what's she to do?
It's very challenging. What you see, it's a woodland bulb. Walking through any of the woodland walks in Wicklow, when that is in flower, it looks absolutely brilliant, whatever about the scent, the pungent scent you get from it. If you're not going to dig out, just covering, not allowing the plant to get any light. Eventually, it will wither away. But unfortunately, if you maybe quite rightly aren't using weed killers, I think it is just digging out.
Okay, hundreds more hours work ahead for Norma there. Thank you very much indeed. Mary Staunton and Dermot Gavin, we'll talk to you both very soon. Thank you for joining us. Still getting so many meatloaf memories, and they're great. This one, met meatloaf on a flight to Thailand when we were on our honeymoon in the Far East in 1983. He was a gentleman and he chatted to everyone. John hasn't played meatloaf in about 12 months, but I decided to put on some music on my way back from a hike in Connemara yesterday, and I chose meatloaf. So sad to hear he died last night. Thank you for that, John. Christine brought her niece to a meatloaf concert. I told her that she wouldn't be let in until she could tell the security person five songs that meatloaf had sung. I went in front of her, got the security person to ask her to name the five songs. She came in behind me. I watched as she reeled out 10 songs. Happy memories. The best singer I have ever seen live. Thanks for that, Christine. And we have another one. Oh, did I just removed that from my list. Anyway, keep them coming in. 51551 for the meatloaf memories and anything else that occurs to you this morning. We'll be back after this with The Gathering.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.